out of the book of Jonah. So if you guys could turn to the book of Jonah for me. I'm going to read the whole book so it's as fresh in your mind as it is in mine. I've been studying this for a little while and just kind of looking at the life of Jonah in this small book, four chapters. And in the small book, we see just a really clippet of his life. He's also seen in Kings, 2 Kings, which we'll refer to a little bit later. But he is a, I would call him a lot like us in aspects of our life and what we see in him. So let's just read the book of Jonah. Like I said, it's four short chapters, and then we'll dive into 3 points of exhortation I have for you today. Jonah 1:1. Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, "Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and cry out against it, for their wickedness has come up before me." But Jonah arose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of Yahweh. He went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare and went down into it to go with them to Tarshish from the presence of Yahweh. But Yahweh sent out a great wind on the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship was about to be broken up. Then the mariners were afraid, and every man cried out to his God, and threw the cargo that was in the ship into the sea to lighten the load. But Jonah had gone down into the lowest part of the ship, and laid down and was fast asleep. So the captain came to him and said, "What do you mean, sleeper? Arise, call on your God. Perhaps your God will consider us so that we may not perish." And they said to one another, "Come, let us cast lots that we may know for whose cause this trouble has come upon us." So they cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. Then they said to him, "Please tell us for whose cause is this trouble upon us, and what is your occupation? And where do you come from, and where is your country, and of what people are you?" So he said to them, "I am a Hebrew, and I fear Yahweh, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land." Then the men were exceedingly afraid and said to them, "Why have you done this?" For the men knew that he fled from the presence of Yahweh because he had told them. And they said to him, "What shall we do to you that the sea may be calm for us?" For the sea was growing more tempestuously. And he said to them, "Pick me up and throw me into the sea. Then the sea will become calm for you, for I know this great tempest is because of me." Nevertheless, the men rowed hard to return to the land, but they could not, for the sea continued to grow more tempest against them. Therefore they cried out to Yahweh and said, "We pray, O Yahweh, please do not let us perish for this man's life, and do not charge us with innocent blood, for you, O Yahweh, have done as it pleased you." So they picked up Jonah and threw him into the sea, and the sea ceased from its raging. And the men feared Yahweh exceedingly, and offered a sacrifice to Yahweh, and took vows. Now Yahweh had prepared a great fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and 3 nights. And Jonah prayed to Yahweh his God from the fish's belly, and he said, "I cried out to Yahweh because of my affliction, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice. For you cast me into the deep, into the heart of the sea, and the flood surrounded me. All your billows and your waves passed over me. Then I said, 'I have been cast out of your sight. Yet I will look again toward your holy temple. The waters surround me, even to my soul. The deep closed around me. Weeds were wrapped around my head. I went down to the moorings of the mountains. The earth with its bars closed behind me forever. Yet you have brought me up, my life from the pit, O Yahweh my God. When my soul fainted within me, I remembered Yahweh, and my prayer went up to you into your holy temple. Those who regard worthless idols forsake their own mercy. But I will sacrifice to you with the voice of thanksgiving. I will pay what I have vowed. Salvation is of Yahweh." So Yahweh spoke to the fish, and it vomited Jonah onto dry land. Now the word of Yahweh came to Jonah the second time, saying, "Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and preach to it the message that I tell you." So Jonah arose and went to Nineveh according to the word of Yahweh. Now Nineveh was an exceedingly great city, a three-day journey in extent. And Jonah began to enter the city on the first day's walk. Then he cried out and said, "Yet 40 days, and Nineveh shall be overthrown." So the people of Nineveh believed God, proclaiming a fast and put on sackcloth from the greatest to the least of them. Then word came to the king of Nineveh, and he arose from his throne and laid aside his robe, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat in ashes. And he caused it to be proclaimed and published throughout Nineveh by the decree of the king and his nobles, saying, "Let neither man nor beast, herd nor flock, taste anything. Do not let them eat or drink water. But let man and beast be covered with sackcloth and cry mightily to God. Yes, let every one turn from his evil way and from the violence that is in his hands. Who can tell if God will turn and relent and turn away from his fierce anger, so that we may not perish?" Then God saw their works, that they turned from their evil ways, and God relented from the disaster that he had said he would bring upon them, and he did not do it. But it displeased Jonah exceedingly, and he became angry. So he prayed to Yahweh and said, "Ah, Yahweh, was not this what I said when I was still in my country? Therefore I fled previously to Tarshish, for I know that you are a gracious and merciful God, slow to anger and abundant in loving kindness, one who relents from doing harm. Therefore now, O Yahweh, please take my life from me, for it is better for me to die than to live." Then Yahweh said, "Is it right for you to be angry?" So Jonah went out of the city and sat at the east side of the city. There he made himself a shelter and sat under it in the shade, till he might see what would become of the city. And Yahweh God prepared a plant and made it come up over Jonah, and that it might be shade for his head to deliver him from his misery. So Jonah was very grateful for the plant. But as morning dawned the next day, Jonah prepared a worm, and it so damaged the plant that it withered. And it happened when the sun arose that God prepared a vehement east wind, and the sun beat on Jonah's head so that he grew faint. Then he wished death for himself and said, "It is better for me to die than to live." Then God said to Jonah, "Is it right for you to be angry about the plant?" And he said, "It is right for me to be angry, even to death." But Yahweh said, "You have had pity on the plant for which you have not labored, nor made it grow, which came up in a night and perished in a night. And should I not pity Nineveh, that great city, in which are more than 120,000 persons who cannot discern between their right hand and their left, and much livestock?" So as we see Jonah, just a little bit of, I call, history. In my Bible, you have that paragraph before every book where it kind of gives you a description of what's going to happen or who the person is, little history. And I disagree with some of the things. One, it says, the prophet knows, it's talking about Jonah, the prophet knows that God's mercy may follow. That's totally wrong. Because Jonah knew it was going to happen. He's a prophet of God. God is chose him. And so he knew, if I do this, God's going to show mercy to these evil men. And I don't want that. So it wasn't a, he may do this. He knew God's going to do this. It's not a, I don't know about God. He might do this. No, he knows God is merciful. He says it in chapter 4, verse 2, when he's praying. This is, "I knew you were going to do this. That's why I fled for Tarshish." And then he said, "I fled previously to Tarshish, for I know that you are a gracious and merciful God, slow to anger and abundant in loving kindness. One who relents from doing harm." So God doesn't want to do us harm. He doesn't, even someone who's as evil as the Ninevites. Nineveh was the capital of Syria. And I'm not sure where I heard this, but I heard someone say that Syria was so terrible. The country of Syria was like known for their evil ways. You know that game Polo? It's Polo, right? Where the horse, you're riding on a horse and you hit the, right? That's Paulo. Well, they would take their captives. This is just one of the evil things they would do. They would take their captives, and they would bury their captives in the desert up to their neck. And then they would leave them for days, okay? So who knows what's coming to their head, you know, scorpions, whatever. They're dying of thirst. They're slowly dying day by day. And then the Syrians, the evil men that they are, would come and have fun, and they would play polo with their heads, only instead of mallets, they would use these sickles, okay? This is the type of people that Jonah's like, I don't want you to save. These people need to die. They're evil in every way. So, in some ways, if you look at it, look at Jonah, kind of put yourself in Jonah's position, you would say, yeah, those people need to die. I don't want them to be saved. I don't want this, which I know God's gonna give. Because it's kind of, if you kind of look at it this way, it's kind of like a righteous judgment. Like they do this to the people that shouldn't be done. It's almost how we may feel to the people that persecute brethren around the world. Like they deserve to be punished. But yet, in God's love, and that's what we need to learn from the book of Jonah, in that these evil men still had mercy and still had love from God, even at a time before, you know, we're told to love the world, right? This is God's, this is what God is. He is love. He is merciful. He is kind. And like it said in verse 2, one who relents from doing harm. It takes him a while before I'm going to punish you on this. He's slow to wrath, right? And we know his long suffering, his kindness, his goodness, his patience. This is who God is. Jonah is a prophet. Prophets were talking to God, like I would talk to you guys. He's talking to God. That, you know, even the prophets that, you know, you would consider high, like Ezekiel or Elijah or Enoch, those guys, they're talking and walking with God. And then the ones that you would consider, you're not as good as a prophet as you should be, like Balaam, you know, or Jonah. They're talking to God. God's talking personally to them, saying, do this, do that, say this, say that. And so they know how God lives. They know who he is. They know how he acts. So, you know, that's something to just think about, that these men weren't just taken off the street and say, go do what I tell you. They've come to have a relationship with God. The three things that I want to talk to you today about in Jonah, and we can learn a lot from him and God's reaction to Gentiles, one, because they're Ninevites, but this is a call to Gentiles. This is no Jews involved, no Hebrews involved, other than Jonah himself. He's sent out to them, okay? So other than that, if we just take that aside, because that's obvious, there's a lot we can learn from Jonah himself and from God in just their reactions of what's going on, okay? Let's start going through it. The first chapter, he's supposed to be sent to Nineveh, okay? Now, on the map, if you're looking at the Middle East, Nineveh is northeast of you, okay? It's up here. He went to Joppa, which is by the Mediterranean, okay? And it was going to Tarshish, which was west, okay? So he's almost going the exact opposite. Nineveh was like northeast, Tarshish was west. So he's going almost exactly opposite of where God wants you to go. Another thing that I don't believe is that most people said, well, Jonah was trying to run away from God. I don't believe that because he knows God. Like I said, he understands God. He understands I can't run away from him. He kind of tells them that on the boat. He says, I just went the opposite. I didn't want to do what he wanted me to do. It didn't say I was running away, you know, or I was hoping he wasn't finding me while I was sleeping in the boat. He's not stupid like that. He understands that I'm just completely doing the opposite of what God tells me to do. So we get to the boat. The men are on the sea. The sea's coming up. First thing that I really enjoy is in verse 9 and 10 of chapter 1. He says, "So he said to them, I am a Hebrew, and I fear Yahweh, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land." So already we know that Jonah understands you control all of the world. You're not going to be able to hide from him. And then in verse 10, the men were exceedingly afraid. They're exceedingly afraid at what? At what he just said. They're on this boat, and it says in verse 4, I know I'm jumping back and forth, but it said in verse 4, chapter 1, that the storm was so bad, it was going to break the ship. So they were trying to figure out how to get out of this alive. They do all these things, they're talking to their gods, they're trying to get everybody to talk to their own god, because one of these gods has to be doing something here. And Jonah comes up and he says, "Oh, I worship the God that controls all of this. I worship the God that's actually making this happen." And that's why they're like, "Wait a minute, our gods don't control the sea and the weather and the land. This guy, he's done something pretty bad." And then they're like, "Why would you do this?" And then it explains that he told them, "I ran away from God, you know, I thought he couldn't find me, but I just totally didn't do what he wanted me to do." I just find that as soon as he says, I worship Yahweh, I'm from Yahweh, and he controls the weather, they're like, "Oh my goodness, what are we going to do now? This guy's totally destroyed our lives." So as we go on, we see that they try to do what they want, but God's will is going to happen. And that's what you're going to see through this whole thing. That's kind of one of the things I wanted to encourage you about. This whole book is about God's will. It doesn't matter what man does. It does not matter what man does. Man can try to destroy God's will, but God will make it happen if he wants it to happen. And that's I think, the biggest thing, and we'll see why towards the end. But so we go down. He's thrown into the sea. As soon as he's thrown into the sea, the water's calmed. They are probably freaking out even more because how'd the sea calm down that quick? And then verse 17, "Now Yahweh had prepared a great fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights." Okay, it's a fish, not a whale. I'll argue with that. I do believe that Jonah was swallowed by what they call a whale shark right now. They found whale sharks the size of small buses, and they just swim around like regular whales with just their mouth open, just sucking in whatever comes in. They found whale sharks beached or when they were hunted or something, and they found human bones in whale sharks. Whale sharks probably don't even know it's in them. You know, they just keep their mouth open and swim. So I wouldn't be surprised if Jonah got swallowed by a whale shark. And then chapter 2 is kind of goes against what most people say about Jonah himself. He says, most people say, well, Jonah was saved. Even in this paragraph or this little bit to describe the book, it says, "By tossing him out of the boat and into the water, and God's demonstration to protect Jonah." He didn't protect him. He died. This wasn't a thing where it was here, "You disobeyed me completely, but I'll still protect you even in the water." We see that in chapter 2, where he is alive, I agree, in verse 1, where he says, "The belly of the fish. I cried out to Yahweh," I cried, past tense, "out to Yahweh because of my affliction, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol," Sheol is the place that unbeliever, believer alike went to in the, you know, hell's probably still there, but Abraham's bosom was part of Sheol with the chasm. You know the story of Lazarus and the rich man, where they're talking back and forth. Well, that was Sheol, okay? So Jonah was down there. He died. His soul was there. God revived him, and then he's praying out of this, out of the fish's stomach, and praying these things. And if we go down, I find it very interesting that in verse 9, he says, after he praises God and praises him for bringing him back, for hearing his prayer in Sheol, he says, But I will sacrifice to you with the voice of thanksgiving. So he's thanking God for what God has done to him, bringing him back. And then he says, I will pay what I have vowed. Salvation is of Yahweh. That's very important for some of the things I wanted to encourage you about, because this starts the talk about humility from this book. Jonah is very humble, and you're as humble as you possibly can if God kills you, right? Kills you is a strong word, but you know, he allowed you to die for a purpose. And then when you come back, you're humbled because you realize I did nothing to get this, and I did nothing in any of this process other than I totally went against God's will. So, and when he says, I will pay what I have vowed, this is, when you come back from the dead, is the first thing you're going to think of, man, what are all the things I promised when I was alive beforehand? It's like, no, you're not going to, but this vow that he is talking about is the vow that he had with God. You see it in other prophets' books, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, where God comes to him or comes to them in a certain way and says, I want you to be my mouthpiece. And I think it's Jeremiah where he even cleanses his mouth to be the mouthpiece of God. And in doing that, they're vowing their lives. He says, no one's going to listen to you, for Jeremiah. No one's going to listen to you, but I still want you to do this. And they're totally handing over their life to God as a prophet. Now, most the minor prophets, they call them minor prophets, but as the prophets you see like Balaam or Gad or Nathan, these ones that you don't see as much, but you see different, you see them a little bit, they're still doing what we're doing, right? They're walking in the way of the Lord, and in doing that, God says, I have a very important thing for you to do now in your life, in your vow to me. Your life vow to me, a very important thing, and go and do this. And then that's when we see Nathan talking to David. Okay, we see Balaam doing this. And that's directly affected to Israel. Okay, but they're no different than Ezekiel, Jeremiah, you know, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum. They're no different than them because these guys have books against them, they still have a vow of life that they are doing towards God. And when you come back from the death, and the very first thing he says is, I will pay my vow. Like, I'll do what I told you, God, I will do. I will be trustworthy to my vow. I won't back down from what I said I would do in your will. Salvation is of Yahweh. That's a message in itself. So, Yahweh spoke to the fish and vomited Jonah onto dry land. Now, Yahweh's not done with him. And one of this is getting to the big thing I want to talk about. Yahweh's not done with him because I still wanted you to do something that was in my will. If Jonah would have gone immediately to Nineveh, what God wanted him to do would have been done, right? But this whole process, the whole book of Jonah, is going to end up to a big nutshell of what was God's ultimate will for the book of Jonah, for Jonah himself, okay? But we see God's will keep on pushing, like God's not done with you. Just because I rose you from the dead, just because I allowed you to die, then rose you from the dead, you say you keep your vow to me, a fish just threw you up on dry land, you're still going to do what I tell you. So I'm not done with this. We're still going to go to Nineveh. They go to Nineveh. Jonah is humbled now because of his death and being vomit. And he goes and goes to Nineveh. Verse 4 of chapter 3, it says that it's a 3 days journey. Verse 3 says it's a 3 days journey. And in verse 4, he takes his first day walking across the city of this huge town that takes 3 days just to cross it. And he says one thing as he's going. Because if he's really preaching a message or something, then not everyone's going to hear it, right? So he goes walking 3 days straight and says, Yet 40 days and Nineveh shall be overthrown. Yet 40 days and Nineveh shall be overthrown. Yet 40 days and Nineveh shall be overthrown. Yet 40 days and Nineveh shall be thrown. It's like that for 3 days as he's just walking, okay? That's humility in itself. To plain walk for 3 days long and then to say something repetitive for 3 days long right after you're just fish vomit. Okay? He's realizing humility. And we can see humility in God's will. God's will was for him to do this. Because if we cut out the fish part, he was still expecting you to walk 3 days and say the same repetitive message. Right? And in chapter 3, verse 2, it says, "Rise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and preach to it the message that I tell you." So it wasn't any more than that. He's doing exactly what prophets do now. He's in the mode of a prophet and says, okay, you tell me to say this, I say that. I'm the mouthpiece of God. That's what I've been called to do. That's what I was doing before I died. And now it's going to do once I accept my vow again and come back to life. And this is the message. Yet 40 days and then shall be overthrown. This is humility in itself. So the people took on humility themselves when they heard this. Okay? It's a huge city. And if we can add the evilness of this city all combined, throw it into this melting pot, there's tons of stuff that would make you think they're not going to listen. They're huge. They have, you know, multitude in numbers, right? Their one mindset could be going a different way. They've been evil for so long. Way back in Genesis with the Tower of Babel, Nimrod is the one that made the Tower of Babel. It also said four other cities that he made, and Nineveh was one of them. So Nineveh has been around for hundreds, maybe even thousands of years, okay? And this isn't just a city that's just popped up on the grid. So they're putting on sackcloth and ashes. The king tells them, be humble in this message and admit our wrong, admit the evil that we're doing, even to the animals themselves. You're not going to even feed your goats and your cattle. In verse 8 of chapter 3, it says, but let man and beast be covered with sackcloth and cry mightily to God. Yes, let everyone turn from his evil way and from the violence that is in his hands. If you turn to me real quick to James 4:6, this is a well-known verse. James 4:6, but he gives more grace. Therefore, he says, and this is a quote from Proverbs 3:34, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Why were they saved? Why was the city of Nineveh not destroyed? Because he gives grace to the humble. Why do we not get royal spankings every time we sin? Because he gives grace to the humble when we admit our wrongs. Why do things happen to us and things happen to evil men and to those that you would think deserve punishment? Because he gives grace to the humble. Whenever someone humbles themselves, he is right there to accept you back. And it's not even a thing where I'm away from you. It's just admit you're wrong. We had Brothers Daniel the other day, and one of the things that came up was really interesting, is that it was mentioned about David, right? The David and Bathsheba story, okay? After David realized he was wrong, well, first of all, Nathan, the prophet, comes to him and gives him the story of the lamb. The one man that had one lamb, and then the rich man, his neighbor, had tons of flocks and stuff. And the rich man came and took the lamb away from him and killed that for his guests. Right? And they asked David, Nathan said, what do you think should be done? Nathan said, that man should die. Right? And Nathan said, you are that man. As soon as he said that, David said, I've sinned against the Lord. And from that moment, Nathan's response was, God's not going to kill you. And so it's not a thing where it's, let me humble myself and then, you know, really get down there so that God can see how how humble I actually am, and maybe he'll have mercy on me, and then, you know, if I take more steps to humility, maybe this will happen, and then, you know, I'll get in his good graces. It's not like that. All it is if you do something that you know is sin, just admit it. And he's there to grab your hand and pull you back. It's not even a, you know, it's almost like you're falling, or you're walking and you trip on something, and before you can hit the ground, you say, I'm falling, and he's like, I'm right there. Right? Just like Peter was walking on the water, and as soon as he took his focus off of God, which is humility, which is non-humility in itself, because when we recognize the Christ, we recognize everything he's done for us. And when we recognize everything he's done for us, we realize how bad we are. That's humility in itself. So when you recognize humility, he is right there to accept you. It's not a, I need to work my way back to God. It's just admit you're wrong, my child. As someone brought up in Brothers of Daniel the other day that, you know, he knows your thoughts, okay? He's the only one that knows your thoughts, other than you. Not even the enemy, the demons, and Satan, not even they know your thoughts. He knows your thoughts. And if you're not admitting your faults, you're not admitting humility, you're lying to him. Because he knows what you did. He knows your thoughts. Like, if I would think like hatred towards my brother or sister, and I just think it, no one saw me do it, and I don't admit that, it's like God saying, are you really going to lie to me? Because I know what you thought. And you don't admit it, and you just go on. He's like, wait a minute. Just admit. Don't lie to me. And how are you lying to him? You're not saying I didn't do it. You're just not admitting a wrong. But humility is so important to God that you can be a child of God in the year 2015. Or you can be a whole city of Ninevites who aren't even, you know, under the new covenant with Christ and everything like that. And all you have to do is admit you're wrong. That's it. And humility rushes, as soon as humility is, a drop of humility is in the bucket, he rushes to you for help. And you can't, it's, I understand it's probably one of the hardest things because no one wants to admit they're wrong. But it's actually one of the easiest things because he's the only one that knows everything that you do. And so all you have to do is admit, and then he'll be there. It's easier said than done, I know that. But it's very powerful for such a very small action. So back to Jonah, with James 4:6, it really, really highlights this book, this the Ninevites and everything that Jonah's going through. Jonah humbles himself after he's vomited out, and if you think about it, he even humbled himself before then, because he told the people on the ship, I was wrong. It's because of me. I'm the wrong. Throw me overboard. And everybody knows, like, you're probably going to die if we throw you overboard. And he's like, that's the only way you're going to do it. You might as well just throw me overboard. This isn't going to stop unless you do that. That's humility in yourself. Willingly giving yourself up for people that you just met on a boat. That's humility, because you know I'm wrong. From that point on, it was kind of like the bringing back of this mouthpiece of God. So then in verse 10 we see, as James 4:6 gives grace to the humble. Chapter 3, verse 10, and God saw their works, that they turned from their evil way, and God relented from the disaster that he had said he would bring upon them, and he did not do it. Now, chapter 4, I'm just going to skim through it, but chapter 4 is all talking about, and this is I have three things I wanted to say. First is humility. We'll be talking about that the whole time, and you could talk about that till you're blue in the face. The second one is God's will for Jonah and for us. Even in this book, we'll see his will for us in this book. The very small thing, and is all chapter 4, is anger. Jonah is very, very angry at small things, too. Now, I understand that you probably get really angry that people that you think should be punished aren't punished. I could understand that. I think that at times myself, like, God, why won't you just do something? But that's in his love and grace and patience. But Jonah just gets really angry even after the mercy is dealt out. Like, it's all done. Like, what are you still getting angry about? And he's still angry about it. He cries out to the Lord in verse 2. He's praying to Yahweh. And this, at the very beginning, you can just read it, Yahweh, was that not what I said? It's not like that. Like, if you're saying, you're like screaming out like, I told you this was going to happen, right? It's that type of feel. He's so angry. He's like, God, I knew you were going to do this. I knew it. This is why I didn't want to do your will. But he says, Yahweh, was this not what I said when I was still in my country? Therefore I fled to Tarshish, for I know what? You know the qualities of God. That's why you didn't want the good things of life. You didn't want the goodness of God to rain down on people who are evil. I know that you are a gracious and merciful God, slow to anger and abundant in loving kindness, one who relents from doing harm. Yahweh asked him twice, are you right to be angry? And this is my exhortation just for the anger part, and we'll probably be done with chapter 4. But I will just encourage you, when I was saying, like, we as people who can sin in our thinking and then don't admit it in humility to the only person and God that can understand your own, can read your mind, don't be bold in your sin. Now, mind you, we are bold in our sin whenever we do it and we don't care that we did it. We're actually happy that we sin at times because I'm glad that happened. I'm glad I got that done. This person deserved that. Or I really felt good when I did that. Or whatever the sin may be. Jonah is talking to God. He is like a friend almost, right? It's just, it'd be if I was talking to Gary one-on-one. He's talking to him. It doesn't mention that God's presence was there. Like a physical presence or you know, angel of Yahweh. It doesn't mention anything like that. Nothing like Job out of the whirlwind or anything like that. But you do get the feel like he's personally talking. Like it's a talk, it's a conversation. And he's saying, yeah, I'm right to be angry. And I'm fine with it. It's good that I'm angry. And it's like, how bold are you in you being wrong? Now, he just had this big humility trip, you know, and then immediately he goes back to probably his number one sin is anger. And he immediately goes there and says, yeah, I'm right to be angry. Now, God asked him in verse 4, and Yahweh said, is it right for you to be angry? Jonah doesn't even respond, okay? It's probably, and I know you guys can picture this, when you're so angry that you can't even talk to somebody, you know, and you just, I ask you a question, and you just, like, just walk away, right? It's probably that. He was so angry with God, he's like, I can't even deal with you right now. I can't even see you right now. Talk to the hand, old 90s, right? So, we go to that point, and immediately Jonah goes outside the city. So, in other words, if you're arguing with, you know, a relative or a family member, I just can't even be in the same house as you right now. I need to leave. He goes outside the city and makes a shack for himself. And when he's out there, he's getting comfortable. He's like, I'm gonna chill back because I know I'm right. You know, God's not right in what he did. I know I'm right. And he's sitting there and he makes his booth. Now even, and this is why God's so great, even in you yelling in his face, yes, I'm right in sinning against you. Yes, I'm right in breaking this vow that when I just came back alive I said I would follow. Yes, I'm right in doing everything that I did. God says, you know what? I still love you, my son. Here, have some shade while you're sulking in sin, right? And he makes this plant. And you kind of get this thing that Jonah's booth or his little shack that he made. It says shelter here. I've heard other references call it a booth. that it's covering maybe his feet to his chest, because the plant that God made covers his head, right? Shades his head. So maybe he's making a little, you know, tent blanket almost to keep him out of the sun. Now, Nineveh is in Syria, and that's probably it's close to where Assyria is now, around that area, and that's just desert. There's tons of desert out there. So he's getting beat down hard by the sun. And then, and it says, so Jonah was grateful for the plant. So he's like, yeah, I'm right being angry. I'm going to make this booth, and you're going to make me a shade. And that feels so good. It feels so good. And then the morning comes. God destroys the plant. It says that God destroyed the plant. But as the morning dawned the next day, God prepared a worm. And it so damaged the plant that it was withered. So God purposely destroyed the plant. And it happened when the sun arose that God prepared a vehement wind. You see it all the time in the Bible. The east wind in the Bible was this terrible, killing wind that would destroy. It's dry. It's like a sandstorm. The east wind was known as, like, you have to go in shelter and you're going to be in there for a while because it would destroy livestock. It would destroy, not livestock, but you would put your livestock in. It would destroy wheat and crop fields. And if you're out there, you're getting sunburned times 10, right? And so this is the wind that God sends him. And it says God destroyed the plant and God prepared the east wind. Now, why would God do this? And I feel it's kind of like God allows you to go through trials, right? He allows you to go through things. And when he allows you to go through things, he wants you to come out the right way. Jonah's not coming out the right way here. But that doesn't mean that God didn't want him to come out the right way. And so after Jonah grows faint, and he wishes for his death. He wishes for his death before because you were merciful to people that you shouldn't have been merciful to, and I'm angry about that. Now he's asking for death because he's so weak in the flesh. Okay, this is all selfish stuff, and he's not doing the humble thing that he said he would at the beginning. Then God said to Jonah, is it right for you to be angry a second time about the plant? And this is where Jonah says, yeah, it's right for me to be angry, even to death. So I'm not going to relinquish this. I'm not going to say I'm okay with it. And then Yahweh says in verse 10, that end of the book, Yahweh said, you have had pity on the plant for which you have not labored, nor made it grow, which came up in a night and perished in a night. And should I not pity Nineveh, that great city, in which are more than 120,000 persons who cannot discern between their right hand and their left, and much livestock? So God's saying, listen, you didn't do anything to get the plant up. You didn't grow it. You didn't make that shade. And you're angry for that. But you're not angry for work that I've done through you to save this city, and I've worked with this city. I've seen progress with this city. Neither of these things, the city nor the plant, are things that you personally did, Jonah. I did. And even as small as the plant, you didn't have any hand in it. You had a little bit in the Ninevites coming to humility. And so why won't you, why won't you be happy that I worked through you in doing something that I know you didn't want, but in doing my will? Why wouldn't you be happy in that? Because you did something for my will. You did a good thing towards me, and for my will, what I wanted. If you could turn to Matthew 12. I believe this is the reason why the book of Jonah was even written down for us. I think this is the reason why though God didn't want him to sin, he knew it was going to happen. And because he knew it was going to happen, he used it to glorify his name, glorify his son, and glorify everything that is, the gospel. We can learn from humility, and we can learn from anger management from Jonah. But I think this is the main reason why the book was even there. Why the fish had to come up in all of this. I believe this is the reason why. Matthew 12, verse 38. Then some of the scribes and Pharisees answered, saying, "Teacher, we want to see a sign from you." But he answered and said to them, "An evil and adulterous generation seeks for a sign, and no sign will be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For as Jonah was 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and 3 nights in the heart of the earth. The men of Nineveh will rise up in judgment with this generation and condemn it, because they repented at the preaching of Jonah. And indeed, a greater than Jonah is here." I believe this is the reason why we have Jonah. So I think this is the reason why we see the story, why we're able to kind of see in God's galactic and incredible mind why we get to see this clipping. This is a prophecy. This is kind of almost like a prophecy fulfilled, okay? Now, if you look at it, there's two things here. Ninevites will condemn the generation that Jesus was walking on the earth on. Because, why? Well, because the Ninevites, all they heard was, "Yet 40 days and Nineveh shall be overthrown." And I'm sure, I'm positive, on day 2.5, 3, Jonah's like, "Yet 40 days and Nineveh shall be overthrown. Yeah, 40 days." So I'm sure it wasn't an excitement. And that's all you saw was Jonah. And you humbled yourself by that little bit. God incarnate has come to man and is walking amongst us, and nobody is humbling themselves to enter his kingdom. Nobody is saying, "Yes, I'm wrong." Nobody is doing this, put on sackcloth and ashes and not even eat and drink water. The Ninevites didn't even drink water. They wouldn't even allow their cattle to drink water. No one is humbling themselves to the point that they did for just yet 40 days and Nineveh shall be overthrown. And Jonah was tiny, tiny drop in the scheme of God. But what happened with Jonah is, I think, the reason why we get to see it. Because of the sign of Jonah. His sign was, you're going to die. That's another reason why the death was, why you have to argue that he definitely died and it wasn't just swallowed and he was protected living in this fish for 3 days. Because Jesus died and was buried for 3 days. And how is the sign of Jonah not matching up completely with the sign of the Son of Man, right? In verse 40, "For as Jonah was 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and 3 nights in the heart of the earth." The sign was that he died. Okay? Now, yes, his body was in this fish. Okay? Well, Christ's body was in the tomb. Okay? He rose from the dead, but he was dead. Jonah was dead. He was in Sheol. He prayed from Sheol, and God revived him. And then after 3 days, okay, you can go out again. Okay? Christ was dead. He was dead. It wasn't a, you know, spiritual thing. It wasn't, you know, his body was really dead. He was done. It says that he went to Sheol. He said, "You'll see me in paradise," right? Paradise was the Abraham's side of the bosom, Abraham's bosom on the paradise side, when you could see across, like we know about the chasm and everything. So because of that, he's telling the thief on the cross, "You'll see me in paradise." How's he going to see him in paradise if paradise is down there and Jesus didn't go down there? He went down there. His soul was down there. Okay, just like Jonah. Okay, so they both died. They both were buried for 3 days. And this is the sign. Like, we need the humility. We need to read the book of Jonah. And we see the humility and don't get angry at stupid things. But what's the major point? The major point is Christ's sacrifice for us, right? And his resurrection. Which I've always done this every once in a while when there's a time to just chop it up and, you know, talk about the scripture. And I said, to you, what's the most important part of the gospel, the death or the resurrection? And we go back and forth, and, you know, it's always fun to say, oh, well, you can't have the resurrection without the death. And I said, yeah, but the resurrection is the thing that culminates it. Like, if he just died, then what, that didn't do anything, right? So, it's fun to do that, but this sign of Jonah shows us those two major parts of the gospel. Okay, his death and his resurrection, because he didn't stay dead in 3 days. He was only in there 3 days. And then he rose, right? Just like Jonah rose from the dead. So this sign that we see gets to my major topic. God's will happen, whether man wants it to happen or not. Jonah did not want this thing to happen. He did not want to go to Nineveh. Okay? Now that's on Jonah's playing field. God wants me to go to Nineveh, and I don't want to do it. Okay? On God's playing field, he's saying, I know you're not going to do it, and I'm going to glorify my son in you not doing that. Because I'm going to make this fish swallow you. And once the fish swallows you, you're going to be in there 3 days, and you're going to be dead. And then I'm going to raise you from the dead. And then you're going to go do my will. And that's all out of the first choice, the very couple verses of Jonah, I'm not going to do that, God, and I'm going to go to Tarshish. Well, though I don't want you to listen to me, I knew you're going to do that, and I'm going to glorify my son later on because of that. The book of Jonah, we see, is exactly what this evil and adulterous generation seeks for, right? They seek the sign. What was that sign? The death and resurrection of the Christ. And he says, from Jonah, this sign that Jonah, what Jonah did, proves that I am this Messiah. You know, they say, give us something to show you're the guy. And he says, all you need to do is understand this book. If you understand this book, and you understand what happened, and I've told you, yet, you know, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I'll raise it up, and you connect those things, it's like, wait a minute. How are you going to raise this temple, right? They were saying, because they're looking on the physical plane, just like Jonah was looking on the physical plane of Nineveh. And he says, this is the sign of all the things that I've been telling you. If you can read this book and understand it, then you know what I'm going to be doing. And you'll understand that the reason that the book of Jonah is even there is because of me. I'm the reason, Christ is saying, I'm the reason that you even know of that story. Without him, this story wouldn't, you know, without me, this story wouldn't have been there. And it's not, and I'm not going to go into the, well, you're saying that Jesus, that God wanted him to sin. I'm not saying any of that. All I'm saying is that the major point of the book of Jonah, though we have humility and though we have see anger and even anger and righteousness at times, the major point of Jonah is to show this sign of Christ and that his will happen whether there is a willing soul or not. Jonah's was not willing. He did not want to do this. He went the opposite way. You can have a non-willing soul and say, I'll do it, but I really don't want to. And you don't do it as well as God might have wanted you to. You didn't love that person as much as you wanted to. But Jonah did this in a totally opposite way. And God says, I have a sign that needs to be fulfilled by my son years from now. And you will be the one to make this sign happen. You will be it. Whether you try not to be, I'm going to make sure this happens. God's will not be determined whether you have a body member or whether you're a believer that doesn't care that much. If God has a certain plan that's planned out and I want so-and-so to affect Brother B about something, it'll happen. And you, mindless, wandering human, in God's will, is not going to destroy that. And if you think you can, then I would say dive into the book of Jonah and tell me where he destroyed God's plans. Because God's plan was, I need this fulfillment to have. I need you to do this so that my son can show that adulterous generation the sign of Jonah. You're just a pawn in my game, kinda. But I want you to go to Nineveh. But the ultimate goal of going to Nineveh was to show this death and resurrection that my son will prove to be the God that came to do this for you. So my encouragement, one, is have humility, because one, that's the most important thing in love. Next to love, it's humility. And in having humility, accept that though your role might not be so important as Jonah's, you do have a role, and that role is God's will. And, you know, do God's will, and even if you fail in doing His will, He will make sure that happens. So do it to the best of your ability, because, you know, you're not going to deter what He wants to happen. So, thank you.